Hey everyone, today on What's My Frame, back by popular demand, I'm joined by casting director and coach, Jeremy Gordon. Since Jeremy's last conversation with us, he's become quite the social media personality, helping actors daily through his humorous and helpful posts. Jeremy also expanded his business with Jeremy Gordon Coaching. Today we get a behind the scenes of what working with Jeremy is like, along with how to make the most out of our coaching sessions. And because Jeremy and I are friends, we go off topic a few times. And through that, we find some really honest and interesting conversations about the casting and self-tape space. Now, let's get to the conversation. Hello, Jeremy Gordon.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back to What's My Frame.
So excited. Thanks for having me.
First repeat guest. It's pretty exciting. I had to come up with new questions for you.
Love it. Like I'm raising the roof.
I raise it with you. I'm sure all the listeners, they feel the energy. They feel the vibes. Good vibes. So for anyone who hasn't heard your first episode, could you quickly just share a little bit of like what you brought into casting? And then we'll dive into our two main topics for today, which are your new coaching business as well as social media and what you've learned basically and expanded on since our first conversation.
Gosh, good questions. What I bring to casting. I think energy. I have a lot of energy. Way back in the day, I wanted to be an actor, probably like many casting directors. And I did go to college and I studied acting. I have a degree in acting, a BS, funny enough, a BS in acting.
I feel like that's a pretty fitting.
Yeah, you know. And then I never really worked as an actor. I went on a few auditions and I decided it's not for me. Then after working at Starbucks and TGI Fridays and getting a master's in education, I became a casting director through luck, right place, right time kind of situation. And so I think I bring with me, you know, I was in my 30s when I switched careers from teaching to casting. So I think I bring with me a different perspective because I had a full-on other career.
Yeah.
And I've studied acting, so maybe I can talk the talk, but I can't walk the actor walk for sure. But I have this whole perspective on life and just on the business and really wanting to be in it that I think a lot of people don't have because they've been in it for this. This is what they've always done. It's my perspective. I think it's, for me, it's been an interesting journey. And so I just think I bring a different perspective to it. I don't know.
Yeah. When you said your master's in education, you actually taught not actors. You taught regular.
Correct. Muggles, I taught first grade, people, cutie pies. And I taught seventh grade.
Very different crowd.
Yeah, very different, but super cool. The seventh graders are just, they're people. They're dudes and dudettes. And you could have actual conversations with them when they were not being hormonal and weird. Yeah. But it was awesome. So first grade and seventh grade, and then from seventh grade to casting.
Wow. Okay. And then for anyone who wants to go back and hear the whole other episode, that will be linked in our show notes. But for now, let's just dive in because we chatted originally early in the days of Rona. We talked in 2020. It was a different time. You were one of the first to like trust me with your story and your insight. And then I don't know. I just was like, good people and wouldn't let you go. Clearly, we're still like in contact. Exactly.
I love it.
But in COVID, you really found an opportunity to expand your business and also reach out and connect with actors through social media. And I dare say you're a little bit of a casting influencer. I'm waiting for an unboxing. I'm waiting for something like that to happen. But how did that like dawn on you? Did you already like social media or how did that get started?
I liked social media in general. Before COVID, I was more of a Facebook and Twitter user. Before COVID, I think I had 3,000 Instagram followers back in the day of me just posting pretty pictures. And I would get 100 likes or a comment or two. And I was like, all right, this is what Instagram is. It's fine. I don't know how people have 10,000 plus followers. It is what it is. And then COVID hit. And I can't say I had really downtime because I was casting and producing an Instagram show during the early days of COVID. But I decided that because of the show, and I was responsible for PR for the show, that I really needed to figure out Instagram and how to use it and what this was. So along with TSMA Consulting, which are my social media peeps, they taught me and I learned Instagram. And legit, since COVID hit, I think it's now, I don't even know, it's like 65,000-ish followers. So I was able to amp it up that much just during the few years of COVID.
From a casting perspective, what do you think are the do's and don'ts of social media? Because you put yourself out there and are using it as a really connective educational space, but there is a right and a wrong way for actors to be on social media.
I think it's really the same rule for anybody, no matter who you are. But I think actors in particular, because actors, really anyone in this business, has chosen to be in a public eye career. Okay, maybe your grips and your crew peeps are not as much in the public eye, but any actor is going to be in the public eye, regardless of if you are super famous or just starting out. You are, quote unquote, in the public eye, and everything you do and say is scrutinized, especially these days, and you have to be super careful. So I like to, my rule of thumb is live your online life the way you live your 3D life. So you're not going to act differently in person than you would on social media or vice versa. So if you think about how you want to be perceived and how you want people to view you and what you want them to think of you as, that's the person you give off on social media. Don't do it and say it online if you're not going to do it and say it in person, or if you're going to regret it later. I think that's just the general rule of thumb for me. And you have to find your social media voice and what makes you comfortable and what you are interested in sharing on a regular basis, right? You have to be consistent. I forget what I said. It's consistent, proactive, reactive, or something like that. Something smart like that. Consistent, proactive, and reactive all the time on social media. So you have to find what interests you to share and talk about, right? It's not just pictures of breakfast or pictures of my cat. Guilty, very guilty. We'll never stop.
But they're great.
Yeah. Totally. That's what I like to share. Pictures of skiing. Once the snow starts and the skiing starts, I don't stop. I play with my cats. I go skiing. I go to work, and that's my life.
Yeah. Now, that's one side of social media, which is what to be sharing and how to be sharing what authentically resonates with you. What about how to connect with casting specifically, or directors on social media? Because you do work a great deal in the indie space, and I know a lot of indie directors especially like get tagged in posts, and casting directors get tagged in new headshots, and I am very against that, but I'm curious from your perspective, what is a authentic and a non-invasive way to connect on social media?
Good question. There really isn't a rule. There's no cut and dry rule for that. Every casting director will have a different opinion, give different advice on that. And so it's sort of a lose-lose or win-win, depends on how you look at it for actors. But I think generally, I look at Instagram as compared to Facebook. For example, Instagram is a very public forum. Unless my profile is legit private and you can't see it, you can't even friend request me. If it's not private, if I have a public Instagram profile like I do, I'm inviting people to follow me, to comment on my posts. I've run into plenty of people out there who have a public profile, but they disable comments or you can't tag them. That's pretty clear to me what they're cool with. But for me, I'm on there, I'm public, you can tag me, you can DM me, you can interact with me. But I look at it as, you know, we forget that it's not called media, it's called social media, and it's not called pen pal media, it's social media. So for me, DMs are for friends to send me a message if they must, although I'm not really a big DM person because I have a text message and I have 45,000 email addresses and I have so many ways that people connect with me. I don't need another place to do homework. And that's what I like to call it. So when actors try to reach out to people in the industry and send DMs asking for favors or sending random demo reels or trying to market that way, it's just homework for the person on the receiving end. I don't want to wake up and check my Instagram DMs and see there's 17 messages from actors with resumes, reels, self-tapes, favors, etc. Post it on social media. That's the glory of social media. If you post something on your social media, and let's say you tag 10 specific casting directors who either you've met, auditioned for, you know, they cast a show that you really love, they have work that you respect, and it's not just any old casting director whose handle you can find, tag appropriate people, post some news about whatever show you just booked or your new headshot or whatever it is you're posting, or go on my Instagram and watch my reel and comment on the topic, something specific that you're talking to me and adding to the conversation, or asking a question on point that everybody can contribute to instead of me just answering a very specific personal question that only has to do with you, or, you know, I'm posting something about self-taped and you're asking me about headshots or whatever. I think that's the way to get in touch with people is, if we're there, we're there because we want to be there. Well, what are you going to contribute to this conversation? How are we going to legit network and talk, knowing that networking takes time?
Exactly. And I think when I have seen, because like you do have a very active comment section where people are creating a sense of community and sharing resources. And I think that there has really been a shift in the industry, that there's not nearly this gatekeeping that used to be. And there is more, if we have access to resources, let's share those resources with each other. But when you see people that are just like, I made a short film and it's just copy and paste into like everybody's comments, or you see the same comment on multiple posts of someone you follow, I would be very annoyed. I think that's not the right way to do it.
Yeah. It's just like in the back in the days when actors would drop off headshots at random casting offices, they would just drive around town, dropping off headshots to every casting office whose address they can find, regardless of if they were right for anything we cast, or maybe they didn't even know what we cast, and they would just drop off headshots and leave, and literally spend days driving around town, dropping off paper headshots, and usually accompanied by candy, flowers, pizza. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy.
People really did that? I thought that was like urban legend.
All the time. All the time. And most of the time, those headshots would unfortunately just go right in the recycling bin. Don't hate me. I love you.
I mean, honestly, the amount of money that we save, like people gripe and moan about lighting and like ring lights and tripods and stuff now. Think about what we used to pay at Argentum for headshot printing. Yep. We're still saving money. But anyway, I don't know. I like to find a silver lining, and it's kind of like,
oh yes,
if the industry is shifting, you either shift with or you get left behind. And we've
That I want to change subjects, but when actors, and we can get back to this, but when actors ask me about self-taping and remote casting and all of that, and what is it going to be like, and when are we going to get back to normal, or whatever the question is, I'm like, well, I don't know. I can't tell the future. And it doesn't matter what you want.
That's the whole reason you came on the show this time.
I can on Saturdays, just not on Fridays.
Daggone it. Why didn't you tell me that when we scheduled?
Secrets out.
I wanted the 2023-2024 season. Jeremy.
Next time. Yes. Okay. But when actors would ask me this question, aside from not knowing, it also doesn't really matter what anyone wants, because reality is what reality is. And like you said, what's the positive from this? Like, what's the silver linings? What are the good points about this remote casting self-tape world? Because we're not going to change it by complaining. It'll change when it changes to whatever it changes into, regardless of what individuals may think or want. So let's, you know, I like the silver linings and the positivity about it also, because there are some great things about it.
You also have to like acknowledge when, you know, I would love to have an idea of like what the future looks like. Obviously, everybody wants, because there is so much uncertainty in our industry. And I think that's one thing that like actors go after, like understanding the future, because they're like, if we know in June it changes,
right,
we can start getting ready to wear real pants to auditions. Like there's like a, let's be mentally preparing ourselves. It's going to be different for every office. And also it's going to be different commercially versus theatrically. It's honestly, the old was, every office was specific, but
totally. And it's also not up to casting. I think that's one thing that a lot of actors seem to misunderstand, is it's not up to casting. We have not met in secret to decide we're not having in-person auditions, even if people complain about it. We're not allowed to at the moment. Some people are sometimes, but it's up to studios and networks to allow in-person casting, or maybe you can for final chemistry reads only, but then only the director's allowed in the room, or whatever it is. Most film and TV casting offices are still remote because that's what's dictated to us. And just like actors are spread out all over the country during the pandemic, casting, producer, a lot of people have done that as well. So we're not all, you know, hanging out in LA at any particular moment, but can all be there when we need to, just like actors.
Since we're already on self-tapes, let's talk about how you started Jeremy Gordon Coaching, which came about in 2021, really, where you were bringing your love of actors, already casting, and your background in teaching. What inspired you to start this other business venture, and what has been the experience thus far?
Sure. As we've talked about before, I teach. I love to teach. I have a master's in education, and I've been teaching probably my entire casting career classes for other people, and I would guest star in my own way at various companies and for other audition coaches or acting teachers or whomever. I would pop around town and guest teach and do a lot of online teaching even before the pandemic. And I just decided that between me bumping up my Instagram followers and having the background and having so many friends who do this, not full time, but have a whole career teaching and coaching in addition to either casting or acting, whatever it is, I decided that I should do it too, and why not? And I had a lot of push and support from friends like yourself and Dewan Johnson and Heidi Dean, and a lot of people said I should just do it myself. Yeah. So I started Jeremy Gordon Coaching to just sort of officially do what I had been doing before, but now just for myself, and teaching all kinds of classes and doing a lot of private coaching. People seem to want individual coaching either for auditions or scene study or career consultations, social media, whatever anybody wants.
I feel like that there has been this real surge in one-on-one coaching and like that desire. Personally, I think a lot of it comes from that lack of connectivity that actors are like really starved for with self-tapes. But I'm curious, okay, walk us through. I get an audition. I want just someone to ping ideas off of and have another perspective. I reach out to you. How do I get in touch?
So I have my website. It's jeremygordoncasting.com. Then you can go on the website and look at all the services I offer, and you can contact me through the website, or you go on my Instagram, which is just my name, at Jeremy Gordon. And from there, you can either DM me for a class or coaching, or there's my link tree on there, which will lead you. So there's 100 ways to reach me.
Right on.
I like to suggest to actors, I guess it also depends on where you are in your career and how much training and experience you have. Some newer actors just need more guidance in the beginning, even for a smaller co-star role. But I do encourage actors, especially who've been at it for a minute, you don't need to pay me for coaching for every audition. You don't need to pay me for any audition, but I don't like actors to just willy-nilly spend money. Oh, I have a 5-line co-star. Let me pay for an hour of coaching. You know, save your money, trust in yourself and your training and your choices that you can create, and we can work together on the meaty stuff. But if you want to coach for a 5-line co-star, I'm not going to say no. We work together. Everything is on Zoom right now, and it's just about seeing what the actor has prepared, and like you said, bouncing ideas off of, and of course me coming with suggestions and playing around and letting loose and being vulnerable and trying and playing and improvising. And you know, I don't really do any kind of specific method. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've trained with a certain method and it works for you, fantastic. I don't teach any specific method. I'm more of like the Jeremy Gordon
school of
be real, like just bring your real genuine true self and let me believe that, and that's cool. That's bonus points.
Yeah. And what do you ask actors to come prepared, like at what level, once they've gotten their sides, at what level do you like them to be when they get on Zoom with you?
Well, in the perfect world, which never actually happens, because you get the audition the next day, or I mean, I've had people tell me, oh my God, I have this guest star or lead role that's due tomorrow, and it's, you know, 3 scenes and it's crazy. But I prefer an actor yes, be off book or as much as possibly, much as you possibly can, so that you're not buried in your sides. Make your choices, do your thing, sort of be prepared to already go to the audition. And this is bonus work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether you're coming to me with, and then you have 2 days before the audition, or you're coming to me and the audition is the same afternoon, you really have to have done the work so that we can play. I'm not here to make the choices for you or to tell you what the scene is about. You have to do all of your work so that we can come together and accentuate everything. I want to build on the work that actors have already done, unless an actor just needs more guidance because they're newer and we sort of need to start from scratch, then that's also fine. But I have had some actors with experience who have just come to me sort of not really prepared. They didn't have time for the script, and it makes a difference in the output.
Yeah, well, you have to, and if you're comfortable talking about it, I would love to talk about this whole kerfluffle about being paid for self-tape.
I can talk about it from my perspective.
I personally will say from the rooftops, we should not be paid to audition. That's bananas. None of us are speaking for either union or guild. Yeah. Oh my gosh, are we that fancy that we have to like put a disclaimer that it's just our personal opinions? No, what I was going to say actually that like kind of sparked that idea was, you know, you have to be at least close to memorized and off book to play. And that's ultimately the goal. You don't have your sides in your hand when you're on set because you're able to play and create. And if you're going to be paying for coaching, it makes sense when you're working at that level to be able to play, or at least that's just my thought. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, look, I think it's really semantics at this point. I don't tell actors you have to be off book.
Right.
You know, it behooves you to be as off book as possible, like you said, so you're comfortable with the material, so you can be in the moment and live the moment with the choices, and we can play. If you're not off book and you're worried about the lines, that's what we're all focused on. But I'm not going to tell you, you must be off book. You must be memorized.
Yeah, no.
That should be your choice.
Exactly. What are your thoughts over this whole conversation? Some vocal members of the community are digging up old rules that don't apply to current situations and are trying to make a star peg into a round hole.
Yeah. Well, I think, firstly, look, if it's in the contract, it's no matter how old it is, if it hasn't been changed, like we're seeing in government now, like U.S. government, there's a lot of old things, that old laws and rules and whatever haven't been updated that need attention. So,
yeah,
if that needs to happen, then that needs to happen. If it's in writing, it's in writing. And again, it's just another way of approaching things. So sure, I'm never going to tell an actor again that you have to be off book, which maybe I've done for producer sessions, but I'm just not going to tell them that it's required anymore.
Yeah.
It's all gone away. I mean, I understand the hullabaloo about super long auditions, you know, 17 pages for a pre-read, but I personally have never done that unless studio dictates it. I think it's silly.
I think as an actor, you invest so much into the way that you build your life, the team you have around you. It's a respect thing, not only to your future career, your representation, casting, betting on you. Why would you not be as close? Like, it shouldn't be something that we're having to be told.
Right.
It is a commitment to ourselves and our future work. But I was very surprised when that got as much traction and people talking as it did. It seemed
me too. I mean, there's no career in the world where anyone is paid for an interview. You go in an interview and hope that you get the job, whether you're an actor, a lawyer, a publicist, a casting director. I don't get paid for the work I do, and creating lists pages long for the director to see my vision or whatever it is, you know, it's an interview is an interview. And I sometimes have waited hours for someone to be ready for me as well, although that's rare.
Yeah,
it has happened, and it is what it is.
But we are going in the right direction because SAG-AFTRA did just change some rules that they're now on like low budget, 5 pages max.
Perfect. You know what? I don't want to see 10 pages of a pre-read for a low budget film either. That's too much work for everybody. We don't need that much until we know we are interested in you for the role.
Some insight, and I'm not saying that you have ever sent this out, but from just hearing from your casting community and peers, when there is a project and I'm not talking like a network show, but like more of an indie thing, where you get 5 scenes for the same character. What is the thought process there? When as the actor, they seem somewhat on the same tonality, you know?
You mean like if the director tells me that they need to see 5 scenes?
Is that where it's, because like I've never asked, you know, why were these scenes, you know, assigned? But like, sure. I have gotten that where it's 5 scenes, 3 of which are talking to the same other character at, you know, a kitchen table in a cafe. And then there's one where you're, you know, in a car, but they all seem to be fairly conversational. They read all fairly close to the same tone, but they want to see all of them. Where does that originate?
In my experience, that would originate from the director or potentially producers or a combination. But I don't think I've ever said yes to that. I will always push back and say, hey, guys, this is too much material for the actors for a pre-read. You know, I said it also takes up a lot of time for me. And when we're being paid, you know, on a weekly basis, it's not necessary. If you let them do one scene, a few pages, if you like them, we'll bring them back for the callback. We can add more scenes, but it doesn't make sense for a pre-read. Like 99% of the time, they're like, okay, cool, no worries. I just wasn't sure, or whatever. Pick whatever scene that you think is best, or fine, I must see this one very important scene in the car, but the rest we'll save for callbacks. I don't think I've ever had a situation where I got pushback from the pushback. But I guess some casting directors are not comfortable pushing back a little bit. If this is what the director wants, this is what the director is getting.
Yeah.
So I'm glad there are some limitations on length of material for actors, for sure. Yeah. I think sometimes people are also afraid to, they want to see it. They don't want to use their imagination. Wait, see in this, now I can imagine them in this scene. They just want to see it so they don't have to take as big of a risk. But this whole business is a risk and we have to be able to jump off that cliff.
I thought it was a really secure business. What?
What?
What? I thought this was like complete future security.
Red no. carpet life.
At least we can laugh about it. Like, none of us went off and joined the circus. I mean, without really thinking it through, did we not?
Well, I almost joined Ski Patrol, so I came close.
What is that?
Just to be, I've been in the EMT forever, so I thought I'll just go work as Ski Patrol this winter and forget casting for a minute. The oh my gosh, 10 minutes away, I wanted to do it so badly.
Oh my gosh. You would be excellent at that. I thought you meant Ski Patrol was like this like competitive ski crew. I met Ski Patrol once when a skiing trip went awry.
Me too, really?
Oh yeah, backboard skied down the mountain. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was skied on the mountain also, but not on a backboard.
Yeah, it was not fun. Would not recommend. No, haven't been skiing since.
I haven't been snowboarding since, but I ski all the time.
Were you like actually hurt or was it kind
of? Yeah, I was snowboarding in Aspen. It was day 2 of a week-long Aspen ski trip, and I tried snowboarding for the first time because my sister wanted me to, and I separated my shoulder in the middle of the mountain. So that was not fun. And I quit snowboarding and I went back to skiing, but not on that ski trip.
Yeah, no. Got to enjoy some hot cocoa at the lodge.
Yeah, literally my family's skiing for a week and I'm walking around downtown Aspen like, okay, I have a cast on.
Jeremy.
It was not fun.
All right, so walk us through. You're taking a lot of what you were already doing with other, you know, coaching schools and programs and things like that. What is the future of Jeremy Gordon coaching?
Oh, cool question.
What's like the dream machine working on?
You know, I can't say that I have a real answer to that. What is the dream outcome of this? That's a really good thought. I'm going to have to put some time into that. I think off the cuff, I think having, I don't want to say full time because I also need to be casting and producing, but have the coaching be full time enough where if it's not me, it's also working with other people who are sort of working together and coaching, and having great guests and eventually having things be in person. I mean, Dewan Johnson has such a great great format that he does, and he's traveling all over and doing these in-person meetups, whether it's just a hike or a, you know, a coffee in Atlanta. I think that's fun, and I think being able to do that and interact with people and bringing that human element back into it is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, going off of that, you have not only on social media, but you have an exceptional community around you. I have been blessed by your creative community many times. The whole podcast actually has, because you recommend a number of our guests. Thank you again.
Welcome.
How did that get started? I mean, you're very clear. I think anyone within a couple minutes of meeting you can tell you're really good people, but was that always something as you were like coming up in the industry that you stayed in touch with people, or did that become a priority to you after maybe experiencing not good community within the workplace? How did that come about?
I think I've always been that person. I'm a connector. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Malcolm Gladwell. In one of his books years and years ago, he talked about different kinds of people and one type of person. They're connectors, and they're very good at, you meet all kinds of people and you stay in touch, and eventually you connect this person with this person and help them with their networking. And I've always enjoyed that. And I've always found it important. Back when I was, before I was in the business, before I was even a teacher, I was working at TGI Fridays, which used to be in Marina Del Rey, not there anymore. And I served lunch to this one guy all the time. He was in all the time. Come to know, he is a locations manager. Now I'm forgetting the title, but he was responsible for, I don't think securing the locations, but in charge of the location and making sure everything was fine and good and everyone had what they needed and the location was safe. And we just got to talking about it. And he said, I can hire you on my next movie. You should just come check it out. And I had never been on a set like that before. And it was Beverly Hills Ninja with Chris Farley and Nicolette Sheridan. And we had a great time. We were in charge of securing this fancy, crazy mansion and making sure that, you know, the marble floor wasn't hurt, and we didn't go in the living room and watch out for that lamp, and we had to be out by 5 o'clock and whatever. You know, all of these aspects to it, but all because I sort of started networking with this guy and then stayed in touch with years later, and he introduced me to somebody else. And I think that sort of taught me that when I got into the business, that was super important, and stay in touch with all the people that you meet and save their phone numbers. Back when I had the BlackBerry and you were limited to a certain amount of contacts, but it wasn't unlimited, right? Because you only had a certain amount of space. And it's important to stay in touch with people, and not just once every 5 years, but really stay in touch and don't burn those bridges, and have that good community sense. And it just sort of works out. You attract like-minded people, and you weed out the ones who are just not going to be in your life long term. And for me, it's fun to introduce you to other casting directors, and that always comes back around. Like, it's a pay it forward situation. I'll introduce you to this person, and I've had it happen. I've hired an actress and we became friends, and I've hired her a few times. Cut to years later, she introduces me to her very good friend who's a writer director who has now hired me a few times. So it all works out like that. I love that.
That's amazing. I would put your creative community skills up against anyone I know. It is like, we're like, hang my hat on that. It's impressive how you're such an example of do good work and be good people. And like, people aren't just around for a season. And it's really nice because stuff is so ever changing in our business, and it's hard to feel like you stay in contact. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about, like, what are those like respectful and healthy ways to stay in contact, because it's such a weird time, and going into, I can't believe I'm saying this, year 3 of this, not getting to go to SAG-AFTRA for classes, not getting to go in person to these workshops or one-off or weekend intensives. It's so, I don't know. It has a heaviness to it.
Yeah, it feels lonely, and you feel not included. And I know for me that anytime you're hard on one of my projects, whether it's a studio film or this tiny low budget, whatever project, or like, callbacks and you've made it to chemistry reads and we've gotten to know each other a little bit and you've given so much of your time and of yourself. For me, you're family. Like once you're hired and you're doing this $135 a day project, thank you so much. You're totally fam and we're going to bring you back on the projects with a bigger paycheck. And that's not like for the next year, that's forever. And I'm in touch with actors like for my entire career. And I might not have hired them in the past, however many years, but I can pull up their deal memo from 7 years ago and remember that amazing film we did together. And, you know, and we're still in touch and it's so super important.
Yeah. I want to go back to coaching for a minute because I got on my whole soapbox about auditions and all of that and the pages, but we do have tight turnarounds now. Yes. And it's amazing because I think so many more actors are being seen via the self-tape and virtual formats, but it does seem to be a lot quicker now of when things are being, you know, asked to be returned. And also a deadline, just going to preach for a second, it shouldn't be submitted the hour prior, if at all possible. Have you found anything working with actors that is a, I don't want to say a trick, but a skill to be worked, to memorize quicker, to find some kind of cornerstones about the character so that you can work it into your mind a little faster?
Probably not. The memorizing factor is very individual and people mm-hmm. memorize in many different ways. You know, I know for me, I just read the scene a few times and it's pretty memorized. But I know some people actually have to study the lines. I feel if you don't have the time, I mean, even if you do have time, even if you have a week, you got to hop to it from jump. Don't wait. Don't put it off because tomorrow is another day. Hop to it immediately. Start working on it. If nothing else, read through the scene a few times, do some work, do some research, do some homework so that it percolates in your brain as you run the course of the rest of your day and maybe go to your other job or you're picking up your kid from school or whatever it is. It's in your mind and you're making choices and you're thinking about the character and then you can come back to it the next day and really put in the work. If you don't have that much time, you can only do what you can do. I don't think there's a trick to it. You just do whatever works for you.
Yeah.
And being honest and figuring it out. And again, you just have to jump to it, making sure that all of your self-tape setup is good to go always, right? Don't leave it to figure out, oh, I'm going to figure out this glitch next time, or I'll start the setup next time, right? You don't want to put that pressure on you. That's going to take time and something is always going to come up. So have that all situated so you can just turn it on and go. And you know the tech stuff is going to work out just fine. So you can spend the time on your choices and your work.
Amazing. All right. Also staying on self-tapes because, you know, props was always a question in the room. Props have gotten a lot cheaper and a lot more prevalent, I feel like, in self-tapes because people are just like, well, I'm going to throw this in here. Why not? What are your personal thoughts on props and self-tapes?
I'm a fan of the less is more attitude for auditions in general. We yeah. have props departments and set decoration and costume, wardrobe, all that. I don't need the actor to add on those responsibilities. If it's a cell phone, cool, as long as your phone is off and it's not going to ring in the middle of the audition and it's weird to fake a phone with your fingers, you yeah. can use the phone, but I feel like any other prop, you don't need it unless you absolutely need it, right? Even a gun, you don't need to have a fake gun or a coffee cup or sugar packets. You know, most, unfortunately, a lot of actors use props incorrectly. Now, I'm not talking about on set, in auditions, even the sides, you're holding the sides, you're not sure what to do with them. And that is all super distracting on tape. You know, a little different in the room, but on tape, everything is amplified, all sounds. And you've got this little square, so the paper's going to be in front of your face or the cup's going to be rattling and you're going to overuse it. So I just say, forget all the props. Don't worry about that. You don't need it. I know that when the set deck hands you a coffee cup on set, you're going to know what to do with it. Don't worry about it.
Now, when you do have an actor that submits something with a prop, and it is distracting. The performance is like chef's kiss, but it just got a little glitzy, a little extra.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Scream and yell and be really excited. A great example is I was casting the pilot for Snowfall with Kim Harden, and I sort of don't want to name names because maybe they don't want it, but even though it's a really good story, so I'm just going to sound vague and it's probably going to be silly because you're going to figure it out. But one of the lead actors sent a self tape where it looked like a short film. It literally was, everything was, he had the, not just props, but like set decoration and props and sound effects. Like when there was a dog barking, a dog barked, a door slammed. There were different people talking. I mean, it was a whole production for the self-tape. And usually, and prior to that, I would be like, oh gosh, no, it's just too much. Where is the acting? But even though all of these things that I would normally say no to, the acting shone through and it was so incredibly exciting. And this actor had no credits, like legit no credits. And I just screamed, Kim, you have to get in here and watch this. This is our guy. And he's the guy. He's now, I think the last season is airing or going to air.
I love that. I love when like the extra actually is a plus.
Yeah, for sure. And like that, there's rules and then there's exceptions to the rules and 20 exceptions to the exception. And at the end of the day, if you do great work, mm-hmm. all of our pet peeves and the do's and the don'ts, it just don't matter. If you do great work and you show up and show your work, and that's all what's what we're asking for.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Because like how many times has that probably gone really awry? Because yeah, I have heard people doing like auditions and cards and just...
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot that we did not figure out right off the bat. We have come to our new last question because everybody on the podcast knows we have the same question. What's one thing you wish you could tell your younger self? But you, sir, have already answered this.
Do you remember what I said?
I didn't actually listen back to what you said.
Me neither.
I didn't listen back to that. But since you've already answered that, I want to go back and say, what is one thing you're glad you told your younger self?
Oh, man. Okay. What's one thing I'm glad I told my younger self? That I don't want to be an actor. Which is probably the craziest thing to say on this podcast, but
mic drop moment. Seriously.
I love actors, obviously, even though you're all crazy. I love you.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
I don't think I was ever meant to be an actor, and I don't think I was good. And when it's funny because when I was applying to colleges and I applied to a bunch and I interviewed at Ithaca, mm-hmm. and I remember going and doing the whole process. And in my final meeting, they said, so we'll let you come if you want to be a theater. I think it was a theater minor, but we don't think this is what you actually want to do. So we're not going to allow you to be in the BFA program. And I was like, who are you to tell me what you think I want to do? Yeah. Cut to, they were absolutely right. And I didn't actually want to be an actor. So props to Ithaca. but I'm glad I studied acting because now it helps me be a better casting director. But I'm glad I told myself back, I don't know what it was in my 20s, that you really don't want to be an actor.
Okay. I lied. That wasn't our last question because I am really curious because a lot of people do actually really struggle with that of, do I still want to do this or am I stubbornly digging in my heels
right.
because I'm an actor in my small town that I left, yada, 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 yada. How did you personally like come to that conclusion? Was it a series of events or like how did you talk yourself through that? And right afterwards, I guess, follow-up question, did you have like an internal crisis of thinking, oh my God, what did I just do?
No crisis.
Okay.
I went on 3 auditions after I got to LA and I was an actor. I went on 3 auditions and I knew from that 3rd audition that this wasn't my jam. This wasn't what I wanted to do. And I'm not really the person to mull over something for a very long time. When I start thinking about something, it's going to register one way or the other, usually, and I do it. I jump. That's how I decided to go to grad school to become a teacher. And I guess there was a little more into becoming a casting director because I had time. But in general, when I was teaching and it was time to continue teaching or leave teaching and be a full-time casting director, there was no hemming and hawing. I'm like, by teaching, I'm going to be a casting director. So it was the same way to being an actor. I had that feeling and I knew this was not what I wanted, and on to the next.
The lesson is when you know, you know.
Now you know.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us again. This was awesome.
Love it. Thanks for having me back.
Naps for Jeremy.
Thanks.